Today on Jay Sekulow Live, exclusive analysis on the Mike Flynn legal saga by the ACLJ's expert legal team, including Jay Sekulow. You don't want to miss it today on the broadcast.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
We are here now to stop further impermissible intrusion into the sole power of the executive branch under the Take Care Clause to decide to dismiss a case and what circumstances warrant that dismissal. The government here provided an extensive and thoroughly documented motion to dismiss this prosecution.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
This is the quintessential case for mandamus because we have both issues of judicial usurpation of executive prerogatives and a clear abuse of discretion. The judge has no authority to do anything further in the case. There's no case or controversy any longer. The parties have decided. The government has quit. And he also has no authority to go into the reasons behind the executive's determination to dismiss the case.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls 1-800-684-3110 on what happens next. If you've got questions about that in Mike Flynn's case, now that it's been heard by the D.C. Court of Appeals and federal court, a three-judge panel. We'll go through who was on the panel. The oral argument was on Friday. We played a little bit of it on the show Friday just to give you kind of a sense, but we wanted to bring in our legal experts to analyze what happened on Friday and what is an extraordinary hearing on a writ of mandamus before the Court of Appeals and what could happen next. There's a few different options that could happen next in what is now we're calling kind of like the saga of Mike Flynn's trial that just will not come to a close. We are taking, again, your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110 and questions on Facebook and Periscope. If you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, I encourage you to share this with your friends and family now. Here's why. You will not get this kind of analysis anywhere else. You might get 5-10 minutes on cable news, maybe. You're not going to get a full hour analyzing this with top legal experts. So share this now if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope. And I want to go right to my dad, our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow. Dad, with just kind of your overview of what happened on Friday.
Well, before we get into the details of that very important oral argument, I want to address the Supreme Court issued a decision, a much anticipated decision, this morning in a case involving whether sexual orientation constitutes a classification for discrimination laws to apply, specifically the Civil Rights Acts in 1964 involving employment and other matters. It's interesting because in a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court said that, in fact, sexual orientation does constitute a classification for anti-discrimination laws to apply. Some people were surprised at that, but the most surprising thing, I think, for a lot of people, I'm not particularly surprised at it. I expected the decision to go somewhat this way. But the decision was written by Justice Gorsuch, a conservative, which tells you that these issues don't cut necessarily on ideological lines. This was the application of a statute. He looked at the statute. He made a determination that sexual orientation would, in fact, be covered by the act. He was joined by Justice Roberts. That's why it was a sixth. Then the liberal members of the court joined him. There was a dissent by Justice Alito, also by Justice Thomas and Justice Kavanaugh. Justice Alito's dissent saying this opinion of Justice Gorsuch read more like legislation than it did a legal analysis. But they do that with each other, so that's not that unusual. But I will say this, that for those that have been fighting on this issue of sexual orientation being covered under civil rights laws, this was a watershed case today. I mean, and I don't, no matter what side you are on the issue, I don't want you to ignore the fact that this was a big, big decision out of the Supreme Court. One that, again, I'm not surprised that it went that way. Looking at the statute, you could have certainly, you know, I always approach both cases if you're arguing at this for this side or for that side. And these are close cases, and this particular one was not so close, 6-3 decision. So that decision is now the law of the land. Which brings us now to General Flynn's case. And I'll tell you what, in my view, it boils down to.
Let's do it in the next segment. We'll do it in the next segment. About that. Here we go. 1-800-684-3110 with your questions. We'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
All right, so let's set the stage for everyone now on the Flynn case. And by the way, you know, that case involving that my dad was talking about with the Supreme Court, if what was not happening now in Atlanta and still across the country dominating the news, this would be watershed moments where you'd see the reporters outside the U.S. Supreme Court analyzing this all day. And it might get some coverage in nightly news, national broadcast, but it'll get minutes instead of full coverage. And it just kind of tells you where we are as a country right now with what we're dealing with race issues and also with the pandemic itself. That being said, Mike Flynn, he still is dealing with his trial. And to get you up to speed with that, I mean, I think it's important, Dad, to just get people up to speed of how we even got to the Court of Appeals on Friday. We had the Department of Justice come in and say a motion to no longer wanted to drop the prosecution, and that the judge gets to rule on that. Instead of ruling on that and deciding if he wanted to accept that motion, Judge Sullivan decided he wanted to bring in an outside attorney, a former judge, to argue why Mike Flynn is guilty, General Flynn is guilty, so to bring an outside kind of special prosecutor and to kind of continue the case rather than just rule on the motion from the Department of Justice, which he did not have to accept. He could have not accepted it and sentenced Flynn, and Flynn could have appealed that, but instead he tried to do this bizarre thing. He claimed inherent authority to bring in outside counsel. Then he got represented by his own attorney who went before, and it got a writ of mandamus filed from the Flynn team, got actually granted by the Court of Appeals. They heard that on Friday, and they dealt with, are going to be dealing with a whole host of those issues. The outside attorney being brought in to argue against Flynn. The decision by the judge not to just make a call. And it was not clear from the three judges, though, Dad, exactly. They certainly didn't seem like they were ready just to go ahead and dismiss this for Mike Flynn, that they think that this should be handled at the district court level.
Yeah, I think that's right. But look, the ridiculous nature of where we are is you had the United States government come in and say, you know what, we shouldn't have prosecuted this case. We shouldn't have brought this case. We withheld exculpatory evidence. There was a bit of a frame up here. This case should not move forward. We join General Flynn's motion to dismiss the case, end case. And that should have been an order that Judge Sullivan signed in literally minutes, not months. But Andy, what happened here was this judge has got his own agenda, because there is a Supreme, I know we've got a call coming on this, we'll get to that in a moment. But the Supreme Court just a couple of weeks ago in a decision by Justice Ginsburg said, basically, hey, when the parties have decided where the case is going, it's not for the court to keep it going. But that's exactly what's happening here.
Well, that's exactly correct, Jay. Judge Sullivan has decided to become both the prosecutor and the judge at the same time. He has appointed a former federal judge as his amicus curiae, which means friend of the court, to argue against the decision of the Justice Department to dismiss the case, to argue against the defendant's desire to have the case vacated. And he has got some agenda. I don't know what it is, but we're going to probably know on July 16th because, in my opinion, it's going back to the district court and the writ of mandamus is not going to issue. And they're probably going to let Judge Sullivan make a ruling one way or the other on whether to accept the government's motion to vacate, concurred in by the defense or not. And then I predict we're going to be back in the D.C. Circuit again, Jay.
You're probably right. It may end up, end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. Although once there is a decision, to be clear here, once there is a decision by the district court, then the only issue before the Court of Appeals is, did Judge Sullivan have that inherent authority that he calls it to keep the case going or to sentence General Flynn once the parties agreed the case should not move forward? And I think the D.C. Circuit's going to say no to that. But that's in a different posture than what the case is in now. I will say this. Sidney Powell did a fantastic job. Jeff Wall, the Deputy Solicitor General of the United States, did a very excellent job as well. Very well done. The case was well presented. I thought that Judge Sullivan's lawyer was not particularly that effective. But just think what I just think about what I just said. Judge Sullivan's lawyer. That's how bizarre this case has become.
Yeah, and what's interesting also is that, and there's many ways that we can talk about this throughout the show, that the Court of Appeals could come down and they could say, listen, this goes back to Judge Sullivan, but he can't have an outside, he can't bring in an outside prosecutor, or we're going to let him kind of do what he wants to do and see where it goes. But, you know, I think what's tough there is that the damage this does to Mike Flynn and the continuation of being under this kind of the legal issues and being in court, not being able to move on with your life, even when the Department of Justice said we were wrong to even prosecute you. Take a listen to Sidney Powell, bite number 9.
If Judge Sullivan had denied the motion to dismiss on this record, we would be entitled to mandamus right now. To drag this out another 6 months, I mean, it won't just be a hearing on July 16th. It'll go beyond that. I think it's clear from the amicus position now that they want to take General Flynn to sentencing as soon as possible and impose upon him the maximum possible sentence. And to make us go through that process when the ultimate result has to be the grant of the motion to dismiss, the government's just wasting resources out the wazoo pursuing this.
You know, let me go right to the phones. Let me go to Donald in Virginia on line one. Donald, welcome to JSecu Live. You're on the air.
Morning. You pretty much answered my question with that previous case that the Supreme Court ruled against. Yep. I think it was the Ninth Circuit Court.
Yep.
But, so now my question becomes, given that is the case and there's already a separation of powers in the Constitution, clearly defining who has what authority, why are we going through all this? Why can't it go straight back to the Supreme Court and have it settled once and for all?
Yeah, you can't go straight to the Supreme Court, but it raises a really important issue, and you raised the separation of powers issues. So what Judge Flynn's lawyer did was rely on a statute in the rules of Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure about what judges do on motions. But the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure cannot, Andy, supersede the United States Constitution. And the separation in powers of powers is embedded in the Constitution. That's why we have Article 1, Article 2, and Article 3. So the Federal Rule of Civil Criminal Procedure applied in this particular way, I think it's Rule 48, violates the separation of powers.
It does, and it is Rule 48. And it says that the government on its motion before sentencing can dismiss a case. The problem is that it has a little clause in there, Jay, and it says with the approval of the court. And Judge Sullivan has fastened upon that little clause to make himself not just the judge, but the prosecutor in the case, and called in a special counsel, Gleason is a special counsel, you might call him amicus curiae, who wrote a terribly intemperate brief, was even called that by one of the judges of the Court of Appeals in the oral argument, and then got his own lawyer, Beth Wilkinson, to argue on his behalf. So who are the litigants here? You got the government, you got Flynn, You got Gleason, you got Wilkinson, you got Sullivan. I mean, it's crazy.
I have never seen anything like this.
No.
Andy and I collectively have been practicing law 90 years. I have never seen anything like this.
And we're not supposed to see anything like this. I mean, I'm going to quote Justice Ginsburg in that 9-0 Supreme Court decision in May. She said, quote, courts are essentially passive instruments of governments. They do not or should not sally forth each day looking for wrongs to right. They wait for cases to come to them, and when cases arise, courts normally decide only questions presented by the parties. And in a nutshell, this concept dictates that judges decide the case as presented by the parties before them, not to go out questing for dragons to slay or issues to tackle that the parties have not brought before them. I mean, there it is. And yet, Judge Sullivan completely ignoring this very current 9-0.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court unanimously agreeing that judges should not go outside their role of what's being presented before them. And what's being presented before Judge Sullivan is a motion by the Department of Justice to dismiss the charges because of wrongdoing by the Department of Justice, that there was no legitimate investigation, and that motion could then be, that would be before Judge Sullivan. He could decide whether to accept it or not, and the case could then move on out of the district court. He decided to do exactly what Justice Ginsburg said courts should not do. He's not taking a passive role, Dad. He's taking the most active role you can.
Look, he's become a litigant. Let's be realistic here. He's become a litigant. And this comes on the heels of subpoenas being issued. Let's go quickly to Than. I mean, like 20 seconds here, Than. Subpoenas are now issuing from the Senate on this very matter and others.
Yeah, going to be an Article 1 play here as well, Jay, as they look at this dispute that's largely between the other two branches. Just quickly, Jay, what about when Sally Yates gets this subpoena? Because she was in that January 5th meeting where the decision to pursue General Flynn was made. And, Jay, when she testified before the House Intel Committee, guess whose firm represented her? John Gleason. So these conflicts are all over the place.
It's unprecedented what has happened here. In American history, it is unprecedented.
Absolutely. Remember, we're going to continue to answer your questions about this. We've got our great legal team experts here for you, 1-800-684-3110, to call in with your questions. Also, you can put your questions in on Facebook and Periscope. Make sure you share the broadcast as well. If you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, click that share button now. But call 1-800-684-3110. Be a part of the show. And as always, support the work of the ACLJ if you can at ACLJ.com. You can donate today, ACLJ.org. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We'll get to some more calls in just a minute. I want to play some sound from the hearing on Friday from Mike Flynn. So this is, again, you're going to hear first from Judge Karen Henderson. She was appointed by George H.W. Bush to this position, initially appointed to the federal bench by Ronald Reagan. Take a listen to this question. Andy brought it up, Bite 40.
Granted, he may have chosen an intemperate amicus, but that doesn't mean that he is going to deny this motion. And considering the drastic remedy that mandamus is, considering there's no precedent that allows us to move without an order, I don't see, and considering that there's a hearing been set for July 16th, I don't see why we don't observe regular order and allow him to rule. For all we know, he will say this amicus brief is over the top, the dismissal motion is granted.
But here's the attorney for the Department of Justice in response, Bite 41.
The reason I think you should go a step further is it's just not true that even if, as limited, he just denies the, or he grants the Rule 48 motion, it's still not the case that the parties haven't suffered harms. The harms to General Flynn are obvious from the continued prosecution and the threat of contempt, unless this court takes it away. But the harms to the government are really what I'm focused on. You have, as you say, a potentially intemperate amicus. You have all of these allegations being lobbied at the executive branch. We're going to have to answer them in a public forum in a politicized environment.
I mean, let's talk about, let me go to Andy on this intemperate amicus that you mentioned. I mean, intemperate, you know, just the basic definition is a lack of self-control or immoderate. Maybe it's because he, John Gleason, who was appointed to fill this position and actually present in the district court, he has concluded already that Mike Flynn has committed a crime and should be punished for a crime, Andy, and he's written about it extensively, how bad he thinks Mike Flynn is and how wrong he thinks it is. So Judge Sullivan is bringing someone in to prosecute a case the Department of Justice said should not be prosecuted.
That's right, Jordan. There's no doubt in my mind that Judge Gleason, or Mr. Gleason, however you want to call him, was certainly not a neutral amicus, a friend of the court, but another prosecutor. He was the famous prosecutor of John Gotti. He quit being a judge in 2016. He's with a law firm now in New York, and he wrote one of the most vituperative, vitriolic, intemperate briefs I have ever read. He not only said that Mike Flynn should not be allowed to withdraw his guilty plea, but that he should be sentenced, and because of the perjury that he committed before two federal judges, that should be taken into account in giving him the maximum sentence for violation of 18 U.S.C. 1001 that Judge Sullivan could possibly impose. This is supposed to be a neutral amicus of the curiae of the court. I don't think so. This is a prosecutor bent on giving the maximum possible sentence to a defendant who the government has admitted it failed to disclose relevant information to, that was Brady material and should have been disclosed. So an intemperate amicus, an intemperate district judge, a disaster for General Flynn.
Let's go to Jerry's call in Rhode Island on line 3. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hello, team. Is what you're discussing now, is this already nullifying the 9-0 decision that Ginsburg did? And is this alone? Could this be the subject of an immediate mandamus to Supreme Court because of the vitriol and non-neutrality of Gleason?
So you raise a really important question. I think, look, the Supreme Court decision by Justice Ginsburg, which was unanimous, that means 9-0, all the justices agreed that the litigants determine the scope and nature of a case. The court is supposed to be passive, I think, was clearly violated in this decision of Judge, or his lack of decision in the trial, Judge Sullivan, as it relates to General Flynn. Now, having said that, can they take a writ of mandamus to the Supreme Court? In other words, if the D.C. Court of Appeals loses, could Sidney Powell and the Department of Justice file a writ with the Supreme Court? The answer to that is probably yes, they could. Will they do that? That will be a tactical decision that they have to make. But I want everybody to understand this for a moment here. And I want to go back to Fan on this. This comes on the heels of just last week, authorization for a lot of subpoenas, and you just touched on this briefly before, but expand on it, Fan, finding out exactly what was going on by the FBI in all of these investigations.
Yeah, this was just last week, Jay, out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and I think one of the questions that people will probably have, well, what role does Congress have in this? This is a dispute between the courts and the executive branch. Well, not so fast, Jay. I mean, because the Article I branch, of course, has the power to confirm judges. They also have the oversight for many of the programs involved here, including the FISA court. What the committee did last week, Jay, was grant Chairman Lindsey Graham the authorization to issue up to 53 subpoenas for both witnesses and documents related to the origins of the Russia investigation and Crossfire Hurricane, which included this investigation called Crossfire Razor into General Flynn. And Jay, inside that group of 53 are going to be several witnesses that are going to have direct testimony related to this case. I mean, think about James Comey, who was the one that bragged about us going around the White House counsel to do this interview with General Flynn. Think about Peter Strzok and Joseph Pienka, the two agents who went over to do that interview. Think about Brill Priestep, who had that famous memo that said, what are we after here? Are we after the truth? And then, Jay, I mentioned this one just briefly, but I think this might be the biggest one. Think about Sally Yates, who was in that White House Oval Office meeting with James Comey, President Obama, Joe Biden, and then had to testify in front of the House Intel Committee. What firm did she use to represent her? She used the amicus curiae in this case, Judge Gleason. So, Jay, when those five witnesses particularly come before the committee, I can guarantee you this separation of powers issue is going to be asked of them.
Look, I think that there's no doubt about it. And as we know, we'll go in the second half of the program, we can go into this a lot more. I think Harry Hutchison is going to join us as well. But Andy, the whole relationship between the judge and in this particular case now Sally Yates, a witness, it is, what Than said is right, it is really unprecedented.
It is unprecedented. And I dare say, and I don't think it's too strong a term, that I see incestuous relationships judicially and legally that have transpired here, because everybody is related to somebody in some way and cannot be, you know, a neutral arbiter in this case. I am very distressed at the brief that Gleason wrote as an amicus curiae. I don't believe that Sally Yates was ignorant of what was going on in that meeting with the President Obama when she was called back, and her protestations to the contrary notwithstanding. She is a bright, indeed brilliant woman, and knew exactly what was happening and what the intent was of the parties, including Comey and Obama at that time. But things are going to play out in the Senate and the hearings that are going to be conducted, and in the courts too. But I don't think that that any of this stuff is precedented, and I think we're going on territory that is untrodden and dangerous.
All right, folks, when we come back, we'll bring in Harry Hutchison to the discussion. My dad will stay with us. Andy Kahneman will stay with us. Dan will stay with us. And we want you participating as well. We take more of your phone calls and your comments at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And remember, support the work, if you can, of the American Center for Law and Justice at aclj.org. The donations are tax deductible. You can donate online very quickly and securely at aclj.org. We're going to be right back with a full half hour of additional analysis of the Flynn case on Jay Sekulow Live.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C.,
Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
I want to go just kind of, again, to set the stage here. We're talking about Mike Flynn's case. It was up before the D.C. Court of Appeals, federal court, on Friday. Full oral argument, which unusual to be granted this writ of mandamus, but the whole thing has been unusual. We're going to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. I did want to start with this. It's interesting because it's a comment that came in, and I think we could bring in everybody in to kind of answer this. Gordy on Facebook wrote in, would Judge Sullivan's move make it so that any plea deal offered by Department of Justice becomes an immediate perjury trap? Dad, I'll start with you.
Well, the way that the judge has framed it, I think the answer to that could be yes, because here there was the government has basically confessed error. They've said this it was wrong what took place here. There was, as Andy said, exculpatory evidence that was not put forward. There was other irregularities in the proceeding, and the plea should not have been entered into. It was basically like a coerced plea in a sense. And the government acknowledges and admits it and says the case should be dismissed. We agree with the judge. With the General Flynn, the judge should just sign the order. But he just will not, he cannot get himself to do it. And that's the problem here.
All right. Andy, what about you? I mean, this idea that, I mean, does it put in jeopardy plea deals because then a judge may just interpret that as somehow an immediate perjury trap?
Well, it does. Jordan, as a prosecutor, I have taken many pleas in cases. And the defendant has to say what he did, or the prosecutor has to say what the evidence is going to be. And that means that he's got to say, essentially, confess to the crime that he's pleading to, either in his own words or via the proffer that's made by the prosecutor. Then suddenly we find this tremendous prosecutorial abuse, failure to disclose exculpatory information, failure to disclose information that might be impeaching to the defendant, which should nullify the plea. And the defendant says, well, now I just entered a plea. I admitted to all these things. It is a perjury trap. The defendant, what does this do to plea negotiations going forward is really something that I want to know. I am at a loss as to why Judge Sullivan is making these forays into areas that he ought not to be involved in.
Yeah, I mean, let me go to... Go ahead.
Here, Jordan, which I just want to follow up on what Andy said really quickly here. And that is this. Judge Sullivan's acting as if there's never been a case in history where pleas have been withdrawn, Andy, and it happens all the time. A plea's entered into and then they withdraw the plea. I mean, so this, and then you got the government agreeing, so this should be a non-case. Let's get Harry. Harry's joining us. Harry Hutchison, get his view on the situation as he sees it.
Well, I agree with the analysis put forward so far, and I think that the failure to dismiss in this particular case provides an incentive going forward for all defendants to decline to enter into plea deals, because once they do that, if Judge Sullivan's approach is allowed to stand, then they will set themselves up at least potentially for perjury trap. And the case is even more egregious here. Why? Because the FBI had already concluded on January 4th that there was no derogatory information against General Flynn.
You know, folks, again, we've got a lot of calls, 1-800-684-3110. And longer segments so we can start taking more of those calls, playing more for you from the case. We're going to do that as well when we come back at 1-800-684-3110. If you've got questions, if you've got comments, this is the time to get them in. I got just two phone lines open for you right now. The rest are full with great questions and comments. 1-800-684-3110. Call now. You'd also get your question through Facebook and Periscope. And let me encourage you, if you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, share this broadcast with your friends and family. They're not getting this kind of full analysis of Mike Flynn's case anywhere else with all these legal experts for an entire hour, a live broadcast, breaking it down for you. So click that share button now on Facebook and Periscope. And as always, if you're in a position right now, I know it's a tough time for some people, and others are back at work and have been able to continue to work throughout the pandemic and the other crises. If you can support the work of the ACLJ, do so by donating online at aclj.org. That's aclj.org.
The The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. I want to play for you a little bit more from the oral argument because we're in that time period where a lot of these oral arguments, we're having them broadcasted, at least the audio from them, and that was done here as well. This is Judge Wilkins from the D.C. Court of Appeals, Circuit Court of Appeals, appointed by President Obama in 2013. His question to Mike Flynn's attorney, Sidney Powell, about this appointment by Judge Sullivan of a special prosecutor, if you will, Bite 11.
The order appointing Amicus appointed him to present arguments in opposition to the government's motion to dismiss. That's all that it says in that paragraph. So how is that violating Article 2 to appoint someone to present arguments in opposition?
Because the government had already made the decision to stop, and the government is the only entity that can make that decision. The Department of Justice is the only entity that can decide whether to pursue this prosecution. The judge has no way of doing that on his own through amicus or a special prosecutor or anything else. The government has quit, and it's time to leave the field.
All right, let's get reaction, Dad.
Well, I think I thought Sidney was just brilliant in that colloquy with the judge. I mean, I think she just hit it exactly right. And it's time for everybody to go leave the field. And Harry, the unusual aspect of this, we keep saying this, I know we'll want to get Andy's comments too, is that you have agreement between the Department of Justice. They're basically saying, hey, look, we messed up here. This case should have never gone forward. We should have never brought this case. So now it's not too late. Judge General Flynn wants to remove his, withdraw his plea. We think that's right. You should grant that order. Rule 48 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure say you can, but those rules of criminal procedure do not override the constitutional separation of powers. So ultimately, as that judge just indicated, hey, at the end of the day, you may be right back up there again arguing on the merits here. Harry?
I think that's correct. So if we examine the record of this case clearly, it's very, very likely that Mr. Gleason, in his brief, when he concluded that the Justice Department had departed from its usual procedures in arguing for dismissal of this case, fails to take note of this fact. Mr. Gleason and Judge Sullivan have departed from usual proceedings in similar cases. So first, Mr. Gleason offers a statement of identity, a statement of his interests, suggesting that he is indeed a dispassionate observer. In reality, he is a partisan with a distinguished record of bias against President Trump, and he now accuses the Justice Department of precisely the bias that infects his entire legal analysis. And as Andy Economou pointed out earlier, Mr. Gleason relies largely upon the debunked Russia collusion investigation to make his case, referring at length to this investigation, which goes back to the summer of 2016, when the full flower of Crossfire Hurricane commenced. So if we're going to talk about credibility, I would argue that Mr. Gleason and Judge Sullivan lack any sustained credibility in this case, and maintaining this case against General Flynn makes no legal, practical, or prudential sense.
And I think this call, Harry, then it follows right up on it. Mike's call in California. Mike, thanks for holding on. You're on the air. Hey, Mike.
Thank you very much. Yes, can you hear me?
Gotcha.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on the air as a 1980 CBN University communication graduate. I really appreciate all that the ACLJ has done over the years.
Thank you.
My question to you is, how can we remove Judge Sullivan from either the bench or at least this case?
Yeah, so this is a really good question, Mike, and thank you for calling in. Andy, one of the things you and I have discussed early on, a way out of the Court of Appeals could be here. You know, we're not going to decide whether this judge should rule on this or not rule on this, and maybe it comes back up to this. But you know what? This judge has a lawyer. He is now almost he's basically a party in the proceedings. He's making appearances through lawyers. He's appointed a special counsel, as you said. Now he has an outside lawyer in addition to that. You know what? Judge Sullivan, you're no longer the umpire here. You're no longer the referee. You've become a party in interest, and you need to be forcefully recused. How do you forcefully recuse? The Court of Appeals, I've done this to judges. I hate doing it, but I have done it. To forcefully recuse, it means you go to the Court of Appeals and say, this judge's bias is obvious. We think he can no longer sit independently as a judge, as that referee or umpire, that he's basically become a cheerleader for the other side here. Except in this case, Andy, he's becoming a cheerleader only for his side because the government is with General Flynn.
That's right. I mean, the protestations of Judge Sullivan to the contrary, that he might grant that motion to vacate, really do not carry any truth and believability to them, Jay, because he has made himself very clearly a first baseman here in a baseball game where he was supposed to be the umpire and behind the plate, not out there catching balls and throwing people out. And this is a very dangerous precedent that he has set, and very dangerous for the future of the judiciary. When the judiciary becomes the prosecutor in a case, hires his own lawyer, hires his own special prosecutor, you've blurred the articles of the Constitution together, and you have violated the separation of powers. And one of the things that the D.C. Circuit can indeed do is to say, Judge Sullivan, with all due respect, you have become a partisan. You are no longer a neutral, and you need to get out of the case and let another judge rule. I welcome that kind of a decision from the D.C. Circuit. I doubt we'll get it.
I want to answer Lisa's question on line four from California. Lisa, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my calls. I'm not sure if I missed something here. What is this July 16th date? Did the Court of Appeals do anything, or did they put it off till then? I'm confused
the
about
judge,
what that is.
Yeah, that's a really good question. No, the judge has basically said he'll make up a decision by the 16th of July, or that's when he's going to come to his decision one way or another. And what's up at the court is that the judge should not be in the process of making this decision at all. Let me go to Than really quickly here, though. Than, I think it's actually, we've got some time. Will you lay out for everybody also, there's a congressional component to this. So we're looking at both of these. So our Office of Government Affairs, our legal teams are all involved in this. What happened last week before the Senate Judiciary Committee? Let people know what's going on there.
Yeah, majority of the committee, Jay, gave the chairman of the committee, Lindsey Graham, authorization to issue subpoenas on a number of issues dating back to the origins of the Russia investigation, also the FISA applications, Crossfire Hurricane and Crossfire Razor. Of course, this investigation into General Flynn is Crossfire Razor. Jay, we walked through some of the witnesses that might be subpoenaed by Chairman Graham that relate to this case that we're discussing today. I talked about Sally Yates and her multiple conflicts, but what about another one? Let me give you another one. Bill Priestap, who many of our listeners are going to know about. He is the one that authored those handwritten notes about what he said, what is our goal in going to interview General Flynn? Here's exactly what he wrote. What's our goal? Truth, admission, or to get him to lie so we can prosecute him or get fired. Jay, that is one of the individuals that the Senate Judiciary Committee now is looking at issuing a subpoena for. And you had a conversation earlier about, is this a perjury trap for General Flynn? Well, Jay, if it is, I would tell you it's not the first time that it's happened in this case, because Bill Priestap, who was one of the ones that authored that, admitted that before they sent the agents over to interview General Flynn. So I think it will be very interesting when he gets a subpoena from the committee how he answers that question. I don't see a way he can answer it in a way that exonerates himself, Jay.
No, I think they recuse him. I think that's a possible outcome in this case, is that he gets recused. We'll see soon enough, Jordan.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so to answer that caller's question, so the Court of Appeals will make its decision, and that will then determine how it moves forward at the district court level. So we await the Court of Appeals decision. They've got to decide pretty quickly because of that July 16th date, which the caller mentioned as well. When we come back, more of your comments as well, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We've taken some phone calls, so we've got some phone lines open for you. We'll get to Bill's call first when we come back from the break. But again, if you want to talk to us on air and get in part of this final segment of the broadcast coming up, this is the time to call to make sure you can get on the air, 1-800-684-3110. And what we try to do in the final segment, especially when we have all of our experts on with us, is to answer as many questions as we can. We've kind of gone through the case now. Let's answer your questions and respond to your comments as well. 1-800-684-3110 to be part of the broadcast. The final segment coming up on Jay Sekulow Live. That's 1-800-684-3110. Again, 1-800-684-3110. And as always, I encourage our Facebook and Periscope audience, you'll share this broadcast with your friends and family. If you're watching online, click that share button now. Thousands of people are watching, and you can bring in thousands more so that they're educated and up to speed. And I'll encourage you to donate and support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice online at aclj.org. Even if you want to go to our website and see all of the different work that we're doing at the ACLJ before donating, do that. Go to aclj.org, see all the work we're doing around the world and here in the U.S., and make that online donation. We'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Segment of Jay Sekulow Live. Like I said, we're going to take your calls, your comments. Better get them in now. Phone lines are full right now, but if you want to try to get on, one or two just opened up. You got to call right now, 1-800-684-3110. And as I said, we're going to go right to the phones. Let's go to Bill in Wyoming on line three. Bill, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for answering my call. Let me be real quick. Say an early happy Father's Day to you. Now to my question.
Thank you.
Is that this business with General Flynn, it seems to me that what I understand is that all contracts, agreements, and whatever the heck you want to call it, if they're made under duress, such as in him forced a guilty plea,
right,
doesn't that nullify that, or am I wrong or going in the wrong direction here?
No, I think actually you raise a good point. You know, a coerced plea, Andy, is no plea at all.
That's right. If you coerce a plea under Boykin versus Alabama, which is a Supreme Court case, it is no plea at all. And the judge should ask him multiple questions to make sure his plea is voluntary. But when the government comes in and says, "Judge, we admit that notwithstanding the defendant's plea, we have dirty hands. We have failed to disclose to him exculpatory, exonerative information, information that would impeach." When the government says that, then notwithstanding what the defendant did or said, that prosecution should come to an end. And the Flynn case is the perfect example of when a prosecution should terminate.
All right,
I agree. Jordan, I want to address something, though, while we have a few moments here, and that is the situation with the protests that are going on throughout the United States. And I want to, because now there's a major one in a town I grew up in and have a lot of family in, and Pam and I both have a lot of family in, and that Jordan and Logan were born there, and that is in Atlanta, Georgia, where there have been a lot of protests over the last 3 or 4 days. Now, I want to say a couple of points. Number one, I support the protesting activity as long as it's not violent. Why do I support it? Number one, it's called the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. You have the right to freedom of assembly, freedom of association, freedom to give your opinion, and to do that is in groups. What you don't have the right to do is destroy property or building. So I draw the line at that. Now, for the most part, once there was some little bit of violence that was taking place, and none of it's justifiable, then you had the situation in Atlanta where there was another horrific, I think, the way that case was handled, and I am a big supporter of the police, but the way that was handled, I think, was probably incorrect. And I, you know, again, I don't want to prejudge, but I don't like the video the way I saw it. The man had a, you know, obviously was resisting arrest, but to use lethal force when he had the officer's taser is wrong under any circumstances, and especially so in light of everything going on here. So the protesting is fine. The burning of the Wendy's in the neighborhood that just had been rebuilt is really not good for those that live in those neighborhoods. And Harry, you and I have talked about that before. Protest is one thing. Destroying businesses in minority communities makes absolutely no sense to advance the cause.
I think that's precisely correct. And it has happened far too often in American history that legitimate, constitutionally defensible protests, they often turn into violence, mayhem, or arson. And I think that cannot be defended.
All right, let's go right back to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. Actually, before we do, I mean, Than, too, we were talking about this idea of conflicts and just bizarre scenarios. You talked about the brief filed by Judge Gleason, or Mr. Gleason, the special prosecutor, if you will, appointed by Judge Sullivan, and the unique folks who are now on this brief who have represented others in the past. I mean, it just looks like a lot of conflicts going on.
It's pretty shocking, really, Jordan. I mean, the brief was signed by David O'Neill, one of the attorneys at Judge Gleason's firm. David O'Neill is the same attorney, Jordan, who represented Sally Yates when she testified in front of the House Intelligence Committee. And look, it's not just like there's association with people involved with this. Sally Yates was one of the participants, one of the authorizers of the very abuses in this case that is now causing the government to say we made a mistake and we have to withdraw the prosecution. So, Jordan, for the fact that one of the participants of that abuse, that the same attorney would now participate and sign Judge Gleason's amicus in the case, to me, makes the point that Jay and Harry were making earlier, and Andy as well, that they're just anything but neutral in this case, and the conflicts are all over the place. Quite frankly, the government ought to be running from this case because they're getting deeper every layer we go.
It seems like to me, Dad, and I'm sure Andy would like this to comment on this too, it's like, Sally Yates trying to run this shadow DOJ. I mean, we keep coming back to Sally Yates, this former acting attorney general who got fired because she would not enforce a executive order, which, by the way, was upheld as constitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. Right. But you know, it was her main job was as deputy attorney general for the Obama administration. Was part of all of this targeting of Mike Flynn and was in the room when President Obama was briefing everybody. And now we learn. I mean, the connections to her. It's not just outstanding, it's almost unbelievable how connected this group was and how connected they have stayed, and yet how bold they continue to be, like signing your name onto the brief of a guy saying, yeah, I represented the person who got Mike Flynn in this mess, and now the DOJ is saying what they did there was wrong, but I also believe that Mike Flynn is bad and he should be prosecuted, so I'm going to sign my name to that brief.
No, I mean, look, the fact is we know Washington is a big, small town. And the fact is that it is a bit of a very close-knit group. But look, you made a very good point, Jordan, and I think Andy's going to agree. This is as if those outside the government, including Sally Yates and others, are still being able to influence a judge, even today, indirectly, Andy. I mean, this case should have been dismissed.
Yes, it should be. When Jordan pointed it out, and it really struck me, and I had really thought about it, but it didn't strike me until Jordan just pointed it out, that the lawyer who signed the amicus brief is the same lawyer who represented Sally Yates, yep, who was part and parcel of the Flynn investigation, her notwithstanding her statements to the contrary. And yet now he has the audacity to come into a federal court as an advisor, an amicus, a friend of a federal judge, and say, essentially, Judge, you should sock it to Flynn with every bit of power that you have because he committed perjury, and you should not only give him a sentence under 18 U.S.C. 1001, but it should be the maximum sentence. And who are you that's doing this? The guy who represented Sally Yates, who was part and parcel of the Comey-Obama decision to undermine and to get Flynn out.
Dad, what do you think, just a final minute left, likely options are that the circuit court is going to take? I mean, I know you can't predict ever, but what you think
I think there's a couple ways it could go. The court could say you've got to issue the order now and dismiss the case. They could say, you know what, in light of everything that we've now heard and seen, a recuse on their own motion, sui sponte it's called, on their own motion, they could say the judge is recused from the proceeding, or they could say, nope, he gets to make the decision. You may not like the decision. Come back up here. That would be the only, I think those are the three alternatives. Let me quickly go to Harry. Harry, do you see any differentiations there, or do you think it's one of those three?
I think you're absolutely right, but I think that what fatally undermines Judge Sullivan's approach is the credibility of Mr. Gleason.
All right. All right, folks, that will do it for today. I still encourage you, if you're on Facebook and Periscope, remember, this broadcast stays up on Facebook, so you can continue to share it. If you enjoyed what you learned today about this case and want to let your friends know about it, share the broadcast. And as always, I encourage you, support the work of the ACLJ. Tax-deductible donation online at aclj.org. Donate today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.